Hey everybody, welcome to the Strength Academy podcast. This is Mundo and Grayson here.
How's it going, everybody?
So we have been kind of discussing a couple things that have been going on, and this kind of came about because I've kind of had a reset in my training, and so Grayson and I were kind of mulling over the thought about sometimes athletes don't always come to you with a strength base or previous experience lifting. And in my particular case, I didn't have any type of linear progressions leading up to my training with a barbell. I pretty much just started CrossFit, and I had some like bench press and some minor squat training before starting Olympic weightlifting. But most of my training for the past, I'd say, 4 years has been percentage-based, and I had never done a linear progression on any of my stuff up to this point. So Grayson really had me do kind of like a restarting, building strength from the bottom up with pushes, presses, squats, and benching. And it's really kind of pushed my numbers up, or at least got them back to where they were prior to me being sick. And so I know you wanted to kind of talk about that and maybe introducing that idea to some other people and their athletes.
Yeah. So it was kind of a unique situation because usually when you're dealing with an intermediate athlete or somebody that's been lifting for a couple of years, it's when you're really kind of getting into more of that block periodization. Like, okay, we're going to have a high volume phase and then a strength phase and then a peaking phase. And you're kind of working in these 3 month blocks and you're kind of increasing the weight on the lifts if you're hitting PRs at the end of that by a few kilos, but that's happening over the course of 3 months or so.
Right.
With beginners, you can't really, you know, make them max out the first day and then say, we're going to take 70% of this and work off of that for 12 weeks. Because every time a beginner comes into the gym, the stimulus of that workout is enough to have a strength gain in the next workout. And this is why programs like Strong Lifts 5x5 or even, Riptos, Starting Strength.
Yeah, Starting Strength. Yeah.
So things like Starting Strength work really well for kind of that beginner category because you're taking the, you know, 6 or 7 main exercises and just going up in weight every time you repeat. So, you know, say you start your 5x5 or 3x5 squat with a bar, then the next workout add 5 kilos, the next workout add 5 kilos and go till it doesn't work anymore. And that's typically, you know, the kind of approach we use for especially kids, like new kids coming into the gym, just getting their squats up, doing that kind of linear progression within form tolerance, you know, not sacrificing form for weight, but, you know, moving up in a steady straight line tends to work really well. But what I think, at least I realized I had forgotten when we kind of talked about, you know, what we were going to do to get you back in shape after losing all that weight and realizing that, you know, just because somebody has been lifting for a long time doesn't mean that they've fully tapped in to all the benefits you can get from doing a linear progression. Because if you've never done it before, your body is still sensitized to that stimulus.
Right.
So essentially what we did is we, for you, picked, you know, exercises off the lifts. I think we used percentages essentially the whole time because it's just kind of hard to do a linear progression for snatch and clean and jerk because the technique component is very strong. But for all of your shoulder press, push press, bench press, deadlift, all of our accessory exercises, we haven't really rotated them. We've changed weight, we've changed the number of reps as the weight goes up. So I think now we're down to doubles and triples, where we started with, I think, 6s or 8s. Mm-hmm. But we're in week 11 next week, I think.
This will be
and
week 11.
We've put 2 to 3 kilos on every week going up. And now we're starting to get to the point that you're hitting some good morning PRs, you're hitting some press PRs and some bench press PRs and some rep work in the deadlift.
Yeah.
And then what's been interesting to see is that as we're kind of nearing, you know, where this linear progression is getting really hard, the your classic lift numbers are right back where they should be. You know, we're back to easy 85%. So as we kind of start doing some heavier stuff preparing for this summer, I think, you know, we'll be able to maybe surpass some of those lifts that you had. But I think a large part that's just due to the fact that it's keeping it so simple.
Yeah.
And like a lot of times it's kind of hard to, you know, be like, oh no, we're just going to do the same exercise next week, but I want you to do it with 2 more kilos. Yeah. And I think, so if you are working with somebody that's an intermediate or somebody coming back off an injury, these sort of linear progression programs where you're picking a few core exercises and really just moving them up every week can be really beneficial for strength development. I don't know how I feel about, you know, how much of that constant push of strength can have, you know, fatigue impacts on your lifting. I think we ran into that a couple of times when we, and that was when we decided to change rep schemes.
Yeah.
So like once, you know, fives in the deadlift were making you tired for the whole next week is when we switched over to threes. But so what do you feel like, do you feel like you've kind of learned anything doing this linear progression that feels a lot different than doing kind of a typical, more kind of periodized approach, considering that's the majority of what you've been doing?
Yeah, I think I have learned a few things. And one of those things is that if you don't have a specific exercise that you've been doing for a long period of time and you just start at the beginning with a linear progression with it, you can probably push those numbers higher than you think. So like you said, it's hard to do in clean and jerk and snatch because of the technical component. But like, let's say for bench press, I haven't bench pressed in probably 2 years, like in an actual steady way. So for me, bench pressing every week actually got better and I got stronger in the lift every week. And it's something that I didn't think that I would ever be able to do, like to get back to the numbers that I bench pressed at a peak point, but I'm close to that now. And so I think that if you have an intermediate lifter, and let's say there's a component of the lift that they struggle with, and if you take a linear approach to it, adding that 1 kilo, it's not glamorous. And here's the thing, is like sometimes these methods of linear progressions aren't glamorous because you're just doing the same exercise but adding a little more. So it's not like this huge technical PR, or it's not like a huge strength PR a lot of the time. It's just you're just building on the last week. But if you take that approach for some of these lifts, the accessories, the strength lifts and things like that, a lot of time you end up getting stronger and building the other lifts, you know, in a more solid way too. So like my pushing strength, I didn't think I'd ever hit a PR in my push press for a triple or in my strict press. Like I always thought my strict press was just going to be like this number and that's it. But I've actually been able to push that, but it's because I haven't really had a whole lot of push press work prior to that, like in that type of way, in that linear progression where I'm just adding a couple kilos every week and trying to beat it and saving stuff. I think part of it is conservatism, right? You're conserving energy for that next week because you know you're going to try to beat it. So you're not always going all out and you're not always wrecking the systems that are involved in performing those exercises. So that's been a valuable lesson. So not discounting a linear progression, number one, it was a valuable lesson. Number two, just taking into account that just adding a little bit every week to a previous, you know, what you've done previously can end up with a lot of progress. And I think another thing that I learned was that, like, sometimes you have to take a step back and that'll help you, you know, make more progress. So for me, taking a step back meant starting at much lower percentages. In my case, I was forced to, but if you choose to, you can probably take some of these exercises that you've, like a good morning, like when's the last time you've just tried to add 2 or 3 kilos every week for 8 weeks to a good morning exercise? Like start off light, take that whole 8 week, you know, cycle, add 2 or 3 kilos to that good morning. By the time you get up to it, you'll be like at 80 kilos after, you know, 8 weeks. If you started at 60, you know, you can make that progression. You can make it pretty fairly quickly too. So I think that having that open mind to new approaches, and even approaches that seem kind of routine and mundane have a lot of value.
Well, yeah, and I mean, the linear progression is, you know, kind of the oldest of the, you know, styles of programming, where before there were massive amounts of people doing sports science research. You know, if you look at, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's mentor, idol, Reg Park, you know, if you look at what his beginner program was, it was squat, bench, deadlift, 5x5, shoulder press, bent over row, do some other stuff, all, but then just do a linear progression. So you're training 3 days a week, you're repeating your exercises, and you're just adding a little bit of weight every time. In some of the kind of more traditional linear progression models, they're looking to add the most weight possible to the lift, the fastest. So most of them, you'll see back squat in there 3 days a week, and you're going up 5 pounds every time you repeat a back squat. Oh, wow. So you're going up 15 pounds a week on the squat. And that is, you know, if I think that's a really great approach. We used that with Derek in the gym when he first started out. And it's a really good approach if you haven't done squatting before, mm-hmm. because you start light enough, 85 pounds, the bar, and you add weight every week so that you're just getting a lot of really good practice in for the first few weeks, and it's not really taxing you.
Right.
And then you can go up. Our approach for you is, you know, we've been doing back squat and front squat once a week, and then a unilateral leg exercise in the middle. And yeah, they're not moving up as fast, but because you have a decent amount of training history, I don't think that we could have maintained the, you know, 12 kilos a week increase, you know, like that sort of thing can be, you know, can get really, really hard, really, really fast.
Yeah, I could imagine.
So, you know, if you are interested in kind of repeating a linear progression, you know, you want to make sure that you're starting light enough. Too often, you know, if you pick, you know, especially even in programs like, you know, the LSUS Shreveport program, if your week one 10RM is a limit weight, then your week two and your week three trying to beat that is going to be really awful. So if you're doing a program that you know is a linear progression, start too easy. It's really, you know, like it's important to kind of just start with where all the reps look good. You're not grinding everything. You feel like you have room left in the tank. And then you're looking to kind of maintain that feeling of like, oh, okay, I can probably move this up a little bit.
Yeah.
We haven't run into it yet, but essentially when you're doing a linear progression, you're looking for the point at which you stall. So say, you know, you're in week 7 or 8 and you try to go up for another 3x5 on your strict press, and you make a set of 5, a set of 4, and a set of 3. That's not a failure. That's part of doing a linear progression. If the following week you do 2 sets of 5 and a set of 4, you've made progress. So keep the weight the same and try to do all 3 sets of 5 the following week. If you fail to achieve some measure of progress 2 weeks in a row, take 10 to 15% of the weight off the bar and build back up again. You know, and if you, you know, think about it, if you start with, you know, if you're trying to put some mass on, if you start with 8s and if you stall twice, so you stall, deload, build up again, and stall, then move to 5s, stall, build up again, move to 3s. And if you extrapolate out how long that can go, you can get through the better part of a year continuing to put on a little bit of weight here and there, even a kilo or two. You know, if you're moving, if you're inching those weights up, you're going to be really reinforcing the strength development. But also, what I've noticed with you is that the added weight on the barbell every week has also corresponded to an increase in your bone body weight.
Right.
You know, so getting back into that 73 kilo category, you know, over the course of 10 weeks, you've put on 10 kilos.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been a journey for sure. But I think that's also been a part of that progress too. And the it's contributed to me hitting PRs is that my body weight has also increased in direct correlation with the weight. So like they're directly proportional. So the weight's gone up, my body weight's gone up, and so they're pushing each other. which I've liked because, like I said, I was trying to move up to a new weight class anyway. But yeah, like, so for beginners, let's take my daughter, for instance. Like, she's not really doing percentage-based program. She's doing kind of like a linear hybrid to where I've started her off doing incremental jumps. And each week, I try to monitor for how much she struggles with certain weights, right? So then I'll back off and then try to build that back up. It's almost like a wave, but instead of a wave in a periodization program where you're like building up for 3 weeks and then you back off, this is more like building up the weight, backing off to see how her body responds to it, and then building it back up, but in that incremental linear type of way. So I think that approach, and I've seen you take it with some of the newer lifters, like the we've gotten a handful of teenagers now, and they're all on this progression because we don't know exactly what their true potential is to max out on a snatch and clean jerk, because we don't want them trying to go for a max effort lift with technique that's subpar in proportion to the amount of weight that they're trying to lift. So like, if they're not strong, I mean, maybe they're strong enough to have 115 pounds over their body, like holding an overhead squat, but getting it to that place through a snatch is probably, they're not technically there yet. So we can't push that weight because the technique isn't going to support it. So we have to have them on a linear progression so that we're moving them technically along as well as strength-wise. So I think the linear progression is a good way to build up new people. And then, like I said, if we go back to lifters that have already, they're already at an intermediate level, but maybe they haven't had linear progressions in specific lifts, you can build those lifts back up or strengthen an area through a linear progression and get good results from it.
Yeah, and you know, I use linear progression at almost all, like regardless of what level people are at, I use some of it for everybody.
Right.
So, you know, with our beginners, I think that, you know, like we said, that percentage is going to be inaccurate. And especially with high school kids that are playing other sports and stuff, you know, some days they might feel really fresh and really good, and some days they might not. So having kind of a, you know, looser structure to that program where it's, here are the exercises we're going to do this week. We're going to look back at your training log and try to beat last week's exercises.
Right. Yeah.
But not worry about it too much if you need to have a lighter day because you had three assignments and a presentation, or you stayed out late, or, you know, any of those sort of things. But I think having that kind of degree of, okay, let's just move it up a little bit and see what happens. And then even in our kind of intermediate programs and advanced programs, things like hip extension and strict press, or, you know, tricep pushdown, or, you know, bent over row, the sort of things that I don't really feel the need to program your push presses off of percentage of your push press. You know, I kind of like, you know, let's start at 60% of your jerk for some sets of five or three. And then next week, I just want you to go up 5 kilos. And then next week, I want you to go up 3 kilos. Yeah. And then, you know, we're going to, and then the third week, maybe we'll do a heavy set of three. So as you get more advanced, how long that duration of linear progression can last is going to change. Because the better trained you are, you might only be able to progress a lift for 3 or 4 weeks at a time versus 6 months.
Yeah.
But you can fit it in, and it really makes it a lot easier programming-wise, because it's just, oh, yeah, we're doing presses again. What did you do last week? Okay, go up 2 or 3 kilos. Yeah, just
add a couple kilos to it.
And, I mean, it's not as, you know, complicated, or, like, I think people really like complicated programs because it looks cool on paper.
Right.
And, you know, you're doing a certain degree of, like, okay, well, if I do this program, I can accurately predict where I'm going to end. And linear progression, you can get into that hole too, where you're like, okay, so if I just put 2 kilos on a week for 2 years, I'm going to be the best presser in the country. And it's like, yeah, but I mean, that's probably not what's going to happen.
Yeah, because you'll hit a wall eventually.
Exactly. But the goal is, you know, to exhaust all of the low-hanging fruit, right? Where if you're able to just go up in weight next week, why would you wait 2 to 3 months to see if you can go up those 2 to 3 kilos when they're ready to do it tomorrow.
Yeah.
And, you know, because you do want to, you know, increase that strength at a pretty reasonable weight. One, it keeps people really motivated. While there isn't a huge variety of exercise selection in a beginner linear progression, there is that sense of, oh, I did 10 more pounds today. This is working. Oh, I did 10 more pounds than last week. This is working. And even if you're, you know, doing it in 3 week waves where you're picking a handful of exercises, maybe keeping your percentage stuff for snatch, clean and jerk, but then your squats, it's like, okay, well, let's just beat last week's squat. And then when you can't beat it, all right, let's change gears. We're going to do something different now.
Yeah. Or do less reps or change up, you know, the specifics of the exercise.
Yeah. Variation doesn't have to mean switching between box squats to pause squats to pin squats to, you know, like double bounce, like all that sort of stuff. Like, yes, that is variation, but also within variation is, did you use more or less weight? Did you do more or less reps? That's variation in itself.
Right.
Another really fun way to do a linear progression is with volume rather than intensity. So we've done this a few times. So maybe you start with, this is sort of similar to what the Russian squat program ends up doing, but, you know, starting with maybe 80% for 4 doubles, and then the next week, 80% for 4 triples, and then the next week, 80% for 4 sets of 4, and then adding a rep a week can sometimes be really beneficial. And you can also add a set a week. So if your goal is to build up training volume so that they have more work capacity, sometimes you don't want to advance the weights too much. So, you know, examples of linear progression within the, you know, snatch, clean and jerk percentages would be, say, week one, you go 75, 80, 85. You do doubles at each. Week two, you do 2 waves. Week three, you do 3 waves. Or you add a rep, you add a front squat, you add something.
Right.
And that way, you know, you're keeping within that, you know, target range for snatch, clean and jerk, which is kind of that like 75 to 85% range is the majority of training. And you're increasing the volume there. But that's a good way to kind of do a linear progression for, you know, snatch, clean and jerk work is, okay, well, we did, you know, 80% for 3 singles, then we'll do 80% for 3 doubles, then we'll try to do a triple at 80%. You know, so you're kind of doing that sort of progression week to week.
Right.
And I think it's, I do use, you know, that block periodization stuff. You know, I like, we switch phases, yeah. We do a lot of that. But I think that for the exercises that you know you can push, like, we want to be doing some sort of linear strength progression for lagging areas that are kind of weak. So a good example is, you know, there every now and then you find an advanced athlete that has a really big weak link, like a hip extension or something like right. that. You know, where they can, you know, lift big weights, but they have a really hard time just doing 3 sets of 10 body weight hip extensions. So with that person, you want to make sure that you're progressing that weak link, because if it is a weaker area, it has more potential for growth, right? It's you're further away from your genetic potential,
right?
In that exercise. So you can, you know, have them hold 2.5 kilos the next week, 5 kilos the week after that, 15 kilos the week after that, and build them up to the point that they're doing a linear progression on that, but they're doing their normal percentage-based stuff. Because the big thing is, you know, the graph for, you know, how fast your strength is going to increase, when you're a beginner, you're going to be stronger from every workout. Then as an intermediate, you might be stronger every week or 2 weeks. And as an advanced athlete, you might be stronger every 3 or 4 months or every 6 months.
Yeah.
And the closer you get to your strength potential, the harder it is to make progress. Yeah. And that's where you need those more advanced programs. Like, okay, well, to get you from a 150-pound squat to a 300-pound squat, we can do that really easily just by putting more weight on your squat. But to get you from 500 to 550, we're going to have to do some more complicated things because yeah. you're a little bit more advanced. You have to, there's more stuff. It's going to take more work to get you that 50 pounds than get that first person that 150 pounds.
Yeah, that's the stimulus that's required to make the body adapt is quite different at the higher level.
Yeah, and the reason that I love linear progression is that you take full advantage of having that prime for every workout I do is enough stimulus to add weight. And you take full advantage of that when you're a beginner and you're entering into your intermediate phase with really good numbers in those sort of exercises.
Right.
And I think that our experience with you with that major medical setback and then having to rebuild, that coupled with the fact that you haven't done a program like that before has netted some really, really good results in, you know, both body mass and kind of strength improvement.
Yeah.
And it's just because you hadn't fully exhausted all of your potential to make progress on your, particularly your pressing movements, I think.
Yeah, I think so too.
And, you know, so maybe there's a couple areas that, yeah, we can't do a linear progression for your, you know, like we can't just try to snatch a kilo more every week. But for those areas that you haven't really exhaustively trained, you've still got some of that kind of beginner part of the graph and you're not as close to that absolute limit strength.
Right.
So looking for areas that your athletes, you know, are lagging and where can you actually push that a little bit every week? And then once they start to lose progress there, that's when you can get into the more advanced stuff. But I feel like if you jump the gun right away and you put a beginner on, you know, a 13-week program where they'll test max in the 13th week, they're going to be further behind than the person who just did a little bit more than they did last time.
Yeah.
So it's not as exciting, but it's definitely a worthwhile technique for getting people's lifts up.
Yeah. And if sometimes the exciting stuff isn't the most effective, it just looks cool. And sometimes the boring, I'm not going to say boring. I'm just going to say the more simplified routine approach can be very effective. And if you, and here's the thing, it's like, if you have an advanced athlete and you give them a linear progression, sometimes they, well, it depends on their attitude too, but you know, if you give them a linear progression and you say you have to start light and then you're going to add a couple kilos every week and then they start making 10 kilo jumps. And then by the third week, they're like, oh, I can't push press anymore because I jumped too far. Like, because they just want to get to where they want to be, not take the road that you've set out for them, saying that you're going to be doing a linear progression, start off light and build on it, build on it. Like, with a beginner, it's easier to say, okay, well, this is where you're at. This is how you're going to make your jumps. And you can guide them along a little bit easier. But an advanced athlete, if you give them a linear progression, they could have the potential to be like, oh, I'm just going to make a 10 kilo jump because I feel great this week. And then they can't beat it. Yeah. And then they can't beat it the next week.
Well, so that's a really good example. One of our athletes, I was having them push tens in the squat for a month. So every week we were working up to a heavy set.
Okay.
Once a week. And that final week that we were going to be doing it, the goal was to do 140 for 10. And they hit it, and they were feeling really good, and they were excited and wanted to go up. So, a failure on my part, in the heat of the moment, I was like, yeah, sure, do it. And they put 150 on and hit it for 10. That was great. The following week, they could barely get 155 for 5.
Okay.
So, it was that if we had stuck to the plan and done 140 and then started our fives at 145, finished at 155 and then threes from 60 to 75, that right. They would have ended up with PR triples at the end of that. But because their ability to do that work outpaced their ability to recover from it because they were a more advanced athlete,
right.
You have to be a lot more careful with that sort of stuff.
Okay.
And that's where that kind of percentage-based stuff gets to be really important. As opposed to a beginner, you know, squatting 85 kilos for a set of five or a couple sets of five just isn't going to cause the same damage that 150 for 10 will.
Yeah,
so, I can imagine. You know, if you are using some sort of linear progression for your more advanced athletes, I would suggest not saying beat last week, but say, no, this is the plan, and really lay out what jumps you want them to take.
Yeah.
And keep in mind that, you know, the more advanced of a lifter you are, the more damage you can cause to yourself, which is the point. That's how you get stronger, but only if you can recover from the amount of damage you can do. And a beginner really can't do enough damage to set themselves back.
Yeah.
But a more advanced lifter can do so much work that they then get worse the next week.
Yeah.
And that doesn't, and that's kind of where the fault line is with that sort of approach.
Okay.
So you want to be pretty careful with that. Just because it is really exciting and it's like, yeah, we're going to do it. It's like, but should you? So the, you know, like there's the can and should.
Yeah.
When choosing weight attempts. And I always like to tell people, it's like, just shoot for the long run. Do a smaller jump than you think. You know, right. you're going to get something out of it. I don't remember who it was, but, you know, it was a coach I was listening to on some podcast, and he was saying, I'd rather people leave the gym feeling like they could have done more than knowing that they couldn't have. And I always really liked that. Like, you always leave like you feel like it's like, oh, man, I probably could have done some extra stuff rather than testing it and finding out that you couldn't.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, because, like, that kind of leaves, like, the door open for saying, you know, I can do better next week. Yeah. And I know that there's the two approaches of, like, leave everything out there, right? There's that one. And then what you just said is just, like, you know, leave knowing that you still had some in the tank. So both approaches have their merit. But I think the downside of the all out, like max out every day type of mentality is that, like, what, you didn't leave any room to get better, and there's room to get better. It's just, but if you're constantly on that, living on the edge, redlining your ability to max out and recover, like, it has negative consequences because you won't be able to beat it next time. You won't be able to add to it because you've already redlined it.
Yeah, it's the feeling of, like, psychologically, I think the value is that you have a feeling that you have momentum.
Yeah.
You know, that you're continuing to go. It's the same reason that, you know, we like for people to open at a really comfortable weight and build up, right, rather than opening right next to where it's really heavy. Because even in a meet, you can feel like you're building momentum. It's like, all right, got the first attempt. Boom, got the second attempt. That means the third attempt is there. I have the momentum to get it. As opposed to struggling and grinding out a first attempt and then not knowing or not feeling like the next one's going to be very successful.
Right.
When I talk to people about planning meets, it's always, you know, it always bothers me when it's like, here's what I want for my first attempt and here's what I want for my second attempt, and maybe I'll make my third attempt. It's like, no, you should be planning to make your third attempt. You know, like, it kind of, it's like, how about we shift that down and you just do a lighter first attempt to get a score on the board,
yeah,
build momentum into your second, and then hit that for your third. Because if your second attempt is your PR, then you might be shooting a little too fast, you know? I think that's a tendency I see, is people getting really excited and saying, I want to open 3 kilos under my max. Well, I don't know, man.
It's admirable, but, like, the results are, they kind of show up when you look at the board and people have that mentality. You just see all these red missed lifts. And,
yep,
like, the best totals are the people that made the most lifts usually. You know, and it's an indicator of, like, they were smart choosing the weights they started off at and what they built up to. And if you don't make lifts, you don't make a total. So, you know, why not choose lifts that you can make? Even if you're not totaling as high as, you know, you wanted to, or, you know, unless you're buying for a spot in the Olympics or for a medal spot, like, really, if you're in the B session and you're just trying to do your best, like,
just
why
improve your total?
Yeah, just improve your total. Just, even if it's by a kilo, every kilo counts. Like, why try to max out on the platform if you're not consistent at doing that weight?
Yeah, because you're always going to do better, you know, if you snatch one more kilo and clean and jerk 2 more kilos, you've improved your total. You do that 2 or 3 times a year, you're moving up pretty consistently. Yeah. Rather than being like, okay, I had a pretty good training cycle, so I'm going to open 10 kilos above my PR at this meet. It's like, yeah, but we haven't done it in a competition yet. So, like, easing into those waters, I think, is really important. Yeah. It's tricky, though, because there are people that what they do in training is not the same as how they do in competition. So there's guys like Kane Wilkes and Ian Wilson who open up at or above the best lifts that they've done in training. But that's because that over the course of a long career, you get to know those things about your athletes or yourself. And until you know for sure that, you know, okay, this in training translates to this on the platform, you don't want to take that gamble.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
But if you know that you're a person that always performs much better, figure out what your ratio is. Figure out if 100-kilo snatch in the gym means a 109 in the platform, then that when you do 105 in the gym, then you know that that means you're probably good for 112 on the competition floor. So kind of, you know, figuring out what those ratios are for those rare cases that are doing much better in competition than they are in training. I've personally always done my best lifting in training. I don't usually like the way that I kind of approach meets is depending on how solid the heavy ones that I hit in training were, I'll usually try to, you know, I always look at what's my competition best and what's my training best, and then just try to edge those a little closer together. Because if I've done, you know, a 130 clean and jerk in training, but my best clean and jerk in meets 122, I'm not going to open at 125 and try to hit 130 right away.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm going to try to open at 120, beat my competition best on my second attempt, and then try to go up a little bit and edge closer to that lift that I did with more rest or the music that I wanted to hear or not a bunch of people looking at me. Right. You know, those sort of things. For me, kind of make a difference, and so that's kind of how I like to kind of pick those approaches.
I think those are kind of like outliers, though, and you also have the inverse that's true as well. You can have somebody that does phenomenal in training, they hit high numbers, but then for some reason, those numbers, they get lowered by 10% in competition because of nerves, because of traveling conditions, because of weight cuts and diet and different availability of
resources. Important.
Yeah, and so like those things affect an athlete's performance. And so like somebody that potentially could be hitting, you know, 115 for a snatch in training at a peak, in competition they might be hitting 100. Just because of the travel, because of the weight cut, because of the jitters from being on that stage in front of those judges at that level of competition. So, like, not everybody steps up to the plate and hits home runs when it's game time. Like, sometimes people take a step back because competition doesn't improve them. It actually inhibits, you know, their potential a little bit.
Well, and especially if you are, you know, cutting weight. So, if you're training at 84 or 85 and cutting to 81, how good you felt on your, you know, like before you started your weight cut, hitting that PR snatch, that's going to be harder to do when you're depleted and are 4 kilos lighter.
Yeah.
Because a loss in body weight is a loss in body weight. It affects the movement of the bar. And so keeping in mind that especially if you are cutting, you know, being conservative with that first lift can be really beneficial just because until you get out there, you don't know how recovered you are from your weight cut.
Yeah.
Like sometimes your warm-ups can lie to you a little bit, you know, that they can feel real heavy, but then you feel great on the platform, or your warm-ups can feel great, but then when you get to your top end weights, you're feeling a little bit down. So I think that, you know, especially if you're cutting weight, like, always measure it by your competition bests and not your training bests. Yeah. And, you know, just keep in mind that you are rapidly, you know, if you lost 3 kilos overnight, you're going to feel different that morning. And it might go perfectly, but it might be a little bit harder to get started. So giving yourself that wiggle room is good. We have got way off topic.
Oh yeah,
today.
We're still kind of going along with the linear progression thing because like even in competition you want to add weight and kilos to your total. So we kind of just got on a little tangent.
Yeah,
there,
we stretched that tangent right to the limit of practical advice. But yeah, so I think that for accessory work you should be pushing it. You know, if you've been using the same weight for your hip extensions for 2 years, you know, you've probably got some advancement that you can make there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think it's really important with beginners just to show them that they're making progress every week. It keeps them motivated. It feels like you're accomplishing something every time you come in.
PRs are nice.
Yeah, high school kids especially. You know, you start them light, and it's like, okay, you've never done this exercise before, so the bar is your PR.
Yeah.
Okay, you did this. Okay, you hit a PR this week. All right, we're going to hit one next week too.
Yeah.
And that keeps people really motivated and gets them really hooked on the sport so that they're addicted to it by the time that progress slows down and things get a lot harder.
Yeah.
Well,
speaking of addiction, so like, I know one of the things that we wanted to talk about were selfishness and athletics and being a selfish athlete and what it means and how there's a positive aspect to it and then maybe some, a negative way to go about it too. So I know that we were talking a little bit before about how should a athlete approach like their own training. Should they be selfish, and what does that mean? Like, what does it mean to be selfish?
Well, and that's kind of what sparked this question. Is it's something you hear people talk about. It's kind of a like a meme, you know. It's you know, you have to be selfish to be the best at this. You know, you have to put that first. But I don't know if I think that the word selfish can mean a lot of different things in that context. So I think it's like important to define terms, because I think there's a difference between somebody who's selfish in that they're putting their own well-being first. So like, you know, being selfish about what time you're going to go to bed or what food you're willing to eat and saying, oh, I'm sorry, I'm not going to go to your pizza party because I have to make weight in 2 weeks. You know, right. Like that's a selfish decision. But I think that's a different kind of selfishness than stealing your grandma's DVD player to buy crack. So like, I think that the problem when people hear you need to be selfish to be a good athlete, they're thinking of all of the other forms of selfishness, like, you know, lying to people to get what you want, and, you know, maybe like manipulating somebody into doing what you want. You know, like those sort of selfish acts, like, you know, not letting someone in a trap on track, like, when you're in traffic, you know, like not letting somebody merge with you.
Those people suck anyway, so.
Yeah. So like there's so many different things that can mean.
Right.
So I think maybe it'll be good to differentiate first in the way that, we're gonna get weird, the way that Ayn Rand talked about it, which is there's rational self-interest, which is what her word selfishness meant, versus like, doing something that's not in your self-interest, but because it's instantly gratifying. So like, you know, selfish behavior of, you know, doing a lot of drugs or whatever it is, you know, just like using people and treating them like resources isn't actually in your self-interest in the long run.
Mm-hmm.
So it isn't considered to be that kind of good kind of selfishness.
Right.
I think the idea is that the good kind of selfishness allows you to help other people too, or, you know, makes you a better person for the people that you're involved with. So if you're being selfish about, I need to set aside these 4 days a week to go train because my mood is better and I'm a better husband, or I'm a better, you know, friend, or I'm a better business owner because my mood is improved, you need to take that time to be selfish and take care of yourself so that you're a more effective member of the community or whatever it is. And I think that that's very different than some of the other ways that we can define selfishness.
Yeah. And I think a way to kind of like divide the two is a negative view of self-interest is it's egocentric. And what I mean by that is that your ego is tied into the decision that you're making. Like, it's only about you. It only, like, you're the only reason you're doing it is because you're going to benefit from it solely. So the opposite would be self-interest so that you can be a better person, or you can be a better version of yourself so that everybody benefits from it, including yourself. So, like, if you know that if you don't go to bed by 9 o'clock and get 9 hours of sleep, you're going to be a cranky mess in the morning. So you tell people like, no, I got to go to bed. Like, I'm going to, you know, cut off my contact with the world at 9 o'clock and go to bed. And you wake up and you know, you're ready to take on your responsibilities and you're better for it. That's a selfish reason to cut people off. Right. But everybody's going to benefit from it because you're just better. You're more tolerable. But if you just say like, I don't want to deal with anybody because nobody else matters and I'm just going to do what I want because, you know, I'm the most important person in the world. Like that, number one, that's already like very negative because you're just centered on yourself. And like, if you take that approach as an athlete, that's when people get annoyed with you. Like that's when they don't want to train with you. They don't want to, you know, they don't really want to support you because like you're already your loudest cheerleader. And it's like, you don't care about anybody else. Like you care about yourself to the detriment of everybody else. That's very egocentric.
Yes.
And so to be selfish just means like, if I want to train, I'm going to train at this time of the day because this is when I'm at my best. And I know my friend wants to train at this time, but I can't really train with that person because they slow me down or I don't get the best results from my training session. So I'm going to choose to train at this time, even though it excludes this other person. So it's a selfish reason, but you're going to be a better athlete because of it. And you're a better friend because then you're not annoyed with that person that you're training with. Or, you know, anything that can be basically like saying, I'm going to take care of myself, but it's going to benefit other people too, because I'll be more tolerable. I'll be better to, you know, hang around with, or I'll be better to more attentive to other people after I do what I need to.
Yeah. So I think that, that's a pretty good example. Like, I know that some people feel, when they are going to the gym, this kind of, where they don't want to seem like they're being rude, so they'll let somebody talk to them for a minute and a half into when they feel like they should have taken their set. And, you know, I think, so like a good example of like needing to have that certain degree of selfishness as an athlete is saying, hold that thought, I'm going to take this step. And, you know, you don't have to be rude or mean about it, and you don't have to just like live in your headphones and not make eye contact with anyone. But if it's time for you to take your set, take your set.
Right.
You know, like there's plenty of times where, you know, I'll be, you know, trying to get some lifts in and I might be talking with somebody, but even if they're talking, I'm setting up and doing my set and I'll reply to what they said afterward.
Right.
You know, yeah. Like, so you have to put, you know, it's like, nope, it's my time to go now and not worry about it. Because that's kind of how everybody should be operating, is, oh, this is my time, I need to do this. And, you know, I think, I don't know, it's hard because you can't just tell everybody to, like, be selfish if you're not clear with what you mean.
Right.
And to me, I'm not really sure if I think it's a great way to describe what you need to do, but it's that you need to make make that the priority. And if other people know that that's the priority, then it's easy to behave in that way. But, you know, so especially, this is just some generic advice, if you're a hardcore weightlifting enthusiast and you're spending 15 or 16 hours a week in the gym working hard towards your goals of nationals or American Open finals, or, you know, just putting 10 more kilos on your total, and you start dating a new person, you need to you cannot just say, I like to work out. You need to be very explicit with that means. It's like, no. I know that I like to work out, and I know what you're thinking. That means like, oh, I go to the gym for an hour. And it's like, no. I'm going to be at the gym 5 days a week for 3 hours, and that's just fully sign on to that, and like be upfront with people about what you need to do to accomplish your goals, because then it's not a negative, right? It's it's only a negative if, you know, you mislead somebody into,
so,
you know,
I think this is, it's kind of important that people understand it's more about setting boundaries.
I think that's a good way to put it.
Because if you set a boundary and say, look, this is the line for me, and if you intrude on this, like, it's going to cause a problem. So in that aspect, it's a little bit selfish, but you're also saying this is the line. So if my goal is to be a national level athlete, and this is what I'm doing to accomplish it, and this is the line, if you start crossing this line, we're going to have a problem. And it's not in a rude, like, get in your face kind of way. It's just like, this is my life and this is what I'm trying to do with it. And if you want to be a part of it, I'm letting you know up front that this is part of it. And so that line, if you cross it, it's going to cause me to have a negative, you know, it's going to be a negative outcome because you're interfering with my goals. And so from that aspect, it seems selfish, but you're also being upfront and saying, if you can work with me and stay in this area, like stay within this boundary, then everything's going to be fine. And I think that maybe that's what people lack, is like they lack the ability to set a boundary and say, like, I'm training 5 days a week, I'm training hard, and I have to do this and eat this and have this type of schedule.
Or lifestyle,
yeah. And it's not saying, like, you can't fit into that. It's just saying, this is how you would fit into it. And if they're okay with it, then that's fine. Everything's going to work out because they understand you've already set that boundary. But if you don't, and they're constantly wondering where that line is, then it's going to cause a lot of problems for both of you because you can't set the line and they don't know where it's at. So they just keep overstepping it and getting upset when it changes.
And then everybody just resents each other.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think, you know, setting those boundaries of this is what I want to accomplish, I feel like a more productive person, I feel better about myself, you know, these things are really important to me. Setting those boundaries of this is what time I go to bed, I'm sorry, I can't eat that food, I can't make your birthday party, I have to train tomorrow. Like, those sort of things are reasonable, selfish choices that you have to make if you're really trying to get as good as you possibly can.
Right.
And I think that we all sacrifice those to one degree or another at whatever phase in the year we're in. There's times that I recognize that putting 5 kilos on my snatch isn't the most important thing that I need to do right now. Like, Michaela and I just got married last weekend.
Yeah.
So the last couple of months, it was like, okay, I'm going to try to maintain training and get a minimum in. But I know I'm going to miss workouts to go to, like, a dinner planning thing. Yeah. You know, like, there's going to be those kind of times. But when you are kind of making that training the number one priority, it's just, you know, reallocating your time to best suit what you want to do. And that can be for, you know, business or getting a new job or going to school. Like, no, I'm sorry, I have to be selfish and study tonight. I really like to go out, but I really want to do well on this test. And it's delaying that gratification. Now, an example of what I worry about people is if you go to the gym and you're whining because the bar you want is being used or you can't be on the platform you want.
Yeah.
That's not the way that people, like, I don't think that's what people mean when they say you have to be selfish to be a good athlete. Either. If you're like, I can't lift on the plates that I want, that's where it's a line. That's where it's a problem, right? So that's an example of that negative selfishness where that's just you being spoiled. Like, you're not like...
Yeah, that's the egocentric 5-year-old.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you know, I'm not getting my way, so I'm going to throw a fit.
And that's why I kind of like the using the rational self-interest versus like petty 5-year-old selfishness. You know, I think that there needs to be some nuance.
Right.
And it's hard because, you know, the word just has so many different meanings.
Yeah, and there's a negative connotation.
Yeah, and there's baggage that comes along with it. So yeah, I think, you know, you have to be selfish about your time if you want to get really good at this. If you want to get really good at anything, you have to do that. You have to, like, you know, if you want to learn how to make wooden furniture, you're going to have to sacrifice a lot of your time to put into making your wooden furniture. Like, that's what you have to do. But you don't have to, like, feel entitled to a certain thing. You know, like, right. I think that's where it is, you know, you are making these decisions for yourself. And if it's going to impact somebody else, you know, you need to make sure that that's, you know, clear and that you're doing that in a way that makes everybody better and everybody happier in the long run. Because really, like, you know, the idea of rational self-interest is that if you put living the lifestyle you want, achieving the goals you want, and, you know, if that's career or whatever, if you're putting those things first, you're going to be in a better, happier place, which will make you more beneficial to the people around you.
Yeah.
If you're always giving up things that are important to you for others, you're going to be really unhappy if you feel like you're not, you know, doing the things that you want. So if you're always, you know, at the beck and call of everybody all the time, and that's making you lose sleep or not eat well or miss training, that's a negative. That's a bad, like, you're in a bad place, because you can't just give everything to everyone else, because you end up with, you know, less, like, you don't end up in a happy position. So the idea is that, you know, you need to set yourself in order and choose those priorities so that you can be a better, you know, contributor to society or your relationships or a better friend.
Yeah.
But if you're always spreading yourself so thin, doing 1,000 different things for everybody else, and you're not taking that time to be like, okay, I like helping people, but I need 2 hours every day to lift so that I can maintain this. You know, you have to have that time for yourself. So, you know, if you're, you know, skipping your meditation practice because somebody always needs help moving or, you know, stuff like that, it's like, yeah, you need to be able to say no.
Yeah.
And I think, and I hope that's what people mean when they say you have to be selfish to be an athlete. I hope that they're not saying, like, you need to be self-centered and off-putting.
Right.
You know, you just need to reorganize your things as a priority, rather than kind of being petty about it.
I absolutely agree. And there's nothing I can add to that. I think that's very well said. So, that concludes
the
podcast. I think that covers what we wanted to talk about today. And, I hope that you got some new ideas about linear progression, and then, the idea of being selfish. So it's more about, rational self-interest than the negative selfish, connotation that could be attributed to it.
But yeah, tune in this next weekend. This will be dropping on Sunday. So check out next Friday and next Sunday. Alan and Riley will be competing at the Under-25s and University Championships. So keep an eye out on the Instagram. And we'll be posting links to their live streams. Watch them, support them. There's going to be some good lifting out there. And I think there's that simultaneous World Cup going on at the same time. So
yeah,
maybe we'll
catch... before, a little before. It starts on Monday,
Youth Worlds is at the same time.
So, so follow us on Instagram at Albuquerque Strength Academy. And if you haven't subscribed and liked us on iTunes, go ahead and do that and leave us a review and let us know about the show. And we hope y'all keep listening. And until then, happy lifting, y'all.
Take it easy.